Okay, tough week for all of us, we're going to turn our hearts and our minds to finishing the sugya of Ein Lev Arsof. This is the third in a three-part series. The first part, we looked at the ruling of the understudy Cohen and the understudy wife, kind of looked at the basis for it and kind of getting the background. Last week, we looked at the sugya in the Bavli in detail, as to all of the tricky little nuances of how to formulate the solution of having a backup wife. In other words, how to word the get in such a way that it would work, so there would be, never be a time when the Kohen Gadol was had either zero or two wives or any other number and only had one. And then at the end of Shir, I suggested the reason why the Kohen has to be fully monogamous during the Avodah and what that meant. But the terminology that's used in the term that's used by those who oppose Rabbi Yehuda, and I say it that way on purpose, is Ein Lev Arsof, and I wanted to explore with you what that phrase means. We saw it really first in the Mishnah. The Mishnah is here in source 2 and 3. We'll take a look at the Ktav Yad Kaufman in source 3. Again, Shivat Yamim Kodem Yom Kippurim, Mefarshin Kohen Gadol Meito Lishkat Haparedrin, Matkitin Nino Kohen Acher Tachtav Shema Yaravo Psul. So the Kohen Gadol is sequestered for 7 days, and we appoint an understudy Kohen in case the Kohen becomes Pasul. We're not given details about that, meaning at what point to become Pasul in this process. Is it on Yom Kippur itself? Is it during the 7 days? We assume it's on Yom Kippur itself. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, and this is the part that we're dealing with, Af Isha Acheret Matkinin Lo, we prepare an understudy wife. And again, the Gemara, we dealt with all the technicalities of how we would make that work, the mechanics of it. Shema Tamut Ishto, because you have to be concerned, his wife might die. Shenemar Ba'ado Ba'ad Beito, and he Ishto. So the Kohen Gadol has to kapara for himself and for his household. His household means his wife. Amrulo Chachamim Ein Lo Davar Sof. So the Chachamim disagreed with Rabbi Yehuda, and they used the phrase Ein Lo Davar Sof. So question is, what does that mean? The simple explanation and the way that the Gemara ran with it was that if you're going to be concerned that his wife might die, then you also should be concerned that the understudy wife might die. And once you mathematically say, I'm not concerned with statistics, meaning the likelihood of any one wife happening to die on that day is not very high, and therefore I'm going to concern myself with an infinitesimally small possibility, then that can go on forever, and you could have innumerable wives. Now, question is, what's the nature of that argument? What does Ein Lo Davar Sof mean? I know what the words mean, but what does it mean? Does it mean that you have a concern, but your concern is impractical, and therefore we can't act on it, because taking it to the logical conclusion, we will end up with an untenable situation of a string of 4 million women waiting there to be married to the Kohen Gadol, or 4 million, what we saw last week, 4 million women with Gitin, who would all end up being Grushot because the main wife didn't die. I mean, it's a ridiculous situation. Is that what it means, or may mean something else? We're going to take a look through several sugyot and shas where the terminology Ein Lo Davar Sof is used as an argument against an enactment, right? However, we're going to move to that. I want to first show you this. We're going to come back to this at the end of this year. The same disagreement that shows up in the Sifra, but you're going to see the terminology is a little different. In the Sifra, and we saw this 2 weeks ago at the beginning of this whole series, source one, Minayin shekshem shematkinin lo kohen acher tachtav shema yarabo psul, kach mikadshim lo isha acheret al tnai shema yara davar beishto. Now, the wording here is very different, because in our Mishnah, and it contextually makes sense, in our Mishnah, the Mishnah states, we appoint a Kohen understudy in case the Kohen Gadol becomes Pasul. And Rabbi Yehuda says, we also appoint an understudy wife in case the wife dies. And then they say, Ein Lo Davar Sof. And that is a fully rabbinic function of trying to make sure that no stone is left unturned and no possibility is not accounted for. So we have the understudy wife. In the Sifra, it starts off with the question, Minayin. And Minayin means, what's the source for this? So in other words, Rabbi Yehuda says, I have a source for the idea that we should have an understudy wife. And he says, I'm premising it on the notion that we have an understudy Kohen. Now notice the wording, it's really unusual. Minayin shekishem shematkinim lo Kohen acher tachtav, shemi arad bo psul. He's creating an analogy, and his piece is built on three steps. The first step is there is an assumption that we appoint a Kohen understudy. We all have agreed to that. But he seems to take, at least present in this Braita, that as being a Torah mandate. I'll show you why I'm saying that. Then he says that in the same fashion, we also appoint a wife understudy, wife replacement, if you will. And then the third thing is, he says, there is a source for both of these in the Torah. Tamud lomar v'chiper ba'ado uva'ad beito uveito hi ishto. Divrei Rabbi Yehuda. So Rabbi Yehuda is making the claim that there is a reading of the pasuk that indicates that we have to have an understudy wife because the Torah mandates kapara for him and his household. And in case he doesn't have a household, we got to be able to have a ready-made household to step in. Amarlo Rabbi Yossi. Now in our Mishnah, it's Chachamim. In the Braita, it's Rabbi Yossi who disagrees with Rabbi Yehuda. Imkein ein ladavar sof. What does he mean by that? Because here's the problem. In the Mishnah, Rabbi Yehuda is presented as saying, we have a concern that there might be, the wife might die, therefore we're going to put another wife, and it's parallel to the Kohen understudy. And the Chachamim say, ein ladavar sof. We'll talk about that's the kind of the generic way it's used. But in the Braita here, it sounds as if they're saying that this whole notion that chiper bado va'ad beito mandates an extra wife, we don't buy because ein ladavar sof. But isn't Rabbi Yehuda sort of claiming that this is from the Torah? And if it's from the Torah, what does ein ladavar sof mean? So I just want to put that in the back of your head. We're going to come back to that towards the end of the shiur. Here's ein ladavar sof. So now, if you recall last week in the Bavli, ein ladavar sof became something of a ping pong. Because we're not looking at the whole back and forth about the get that we did last week, but at the beginning of the sugya, the Gemara asked, well, aren't Rabbanan also concerned with unlikely or inadvertent things that happen, such as the coin becoming tameh? And so their answer in this first piece is tumah shchicha mita lo shchicha. That becoming tameh is something that's common, and death is not common. Actually, it only happens once for each one of us. Then, in commenting on ein ladavar sof, so that's how come the Rabbanan can split and say we do need an extra kohen because the kohen gadol only might become tameh. We don't need an extra wife because we're not concerned that the wife's going to die, because death is not as common as tuma. Okay, and then in the ein ladavar sof piece, the Gemara assumed that it meant that we're concerned that multiple wives will die. And so that's a good comment, a good point. And Rabbi Yehuda's answer that we conjecture for him is you could be worried about one dying, but not about many. One person dying is happenstance. Two is way more than a coincidence. Not going to happen. And I'm borrowing a line from Orrick Goldfinger, the book version, not the movie. And the Rabbanan seem to say that I'm not concerned with the statistical likelihood of it. That's the way the Gemara presents it. If I'm concerned that one's going to die, I should be concerned that many are going to die. And therefore, I can't be concerned that any are going to die because it's not going to work, which itself is an odd argument. And then the question is, why don't the Rabbanan turn back and say in and of ourselves about themselves? If they think Tuma is common, why aren't they concerned that the understudy coin will become tameh and his understudy will become tameh? And then you have ein ladavar sof, which means forget the understudy. And the answer that they give is that the coin gadol won't become tameh because he's very careful to avoid tuma. In which case, why appoint an understudy at all? The answer is the understudy will keep the coin gadol honest. He'll know that there's somebody there nipping at his heels if he messes up. So that'll make him even more careful. All right, that's the sugya, we saw it last week. I want to show you now the passage in the Yerushalmi, and it really just explicates. Nothing very new comes out of this. The Yerushalmi starts by quoting the Sifra, which the Bavli did not do. Minayin k'shem shemat kinin lo kohan acher tachtav shema yirah bo psul kach mikadshin lo isha acheret al tanai shema yirah devar b'yishto. And notice, by the way, in the Sifra also, the wording was al tanai, that we mikadish a woman for him on condition. Like we saw developed last week, that the kiddushin are not straight out kiddushin, they're conditional kiddushin. We turned them into conditional gittin to make sure that he would have only one wife. Right, Shneimar v'chiper ba'do v'ad beito beito zu ishted v'biyura amar Rabbi Yosi imkain ein l'davar sof. Now that's the bright, exactly as we saw it in the Sifra. And now the Yerushalmi asks, mahu ein l'davar sof? What does that mean, ein l'davar sof? Shema tamut isha zo. Ein l'davar sof is maybe the understudy wife will die, v'tamut isha acheret. And then you have another wife, she'll also die. Maybe his wife will die and the understudy wife will die. Right, so Amar Rav Mana, this should sound familiar. Adat makshila al Rabbi Yehuda kashyata al Rabbanan. The Rabbanan are challenging Rabbi Yehuda with end of the Varsof. They should be asking themselves end of the Varsof. We saw this in the Bavli. Shema yirakeri the kohen zev yirakeri the kohen acher. And so, why aren't you concerned that the kohen gadol become tamei and the kohen understudy become tamei also? Now imagine what happens. And this, by the way, just to play it out, the Kohen Gadol is doing fine, everything else, and Yom Kippur night, he nods off because he found Daniel to be a little boring. And he nods off. And at the same time, the understudy Kohen, who we assume is in the Azara, also nods off. And the both of them wake up with a carry. So you needed a third and then a fourth, etc. So the answer, carry Matsui Mita in a Mitsuya. Okay, Gazru al Davar Shu Matsui. Now here's an explication. The Rabbanan were only willing to be gozer on something which is common. It's common for someone to become tamei, and not death, which is uncommon. Okay? And then they go through a different discussion about Rabbi Yehuda actually taking the opposite position of saying that mita is mitsuya, right? That Rabbi Yehuda is supporting here because Rabbi Yehuda has a position that mita is more common, and they go through that, which is not our particular problem here. I just wanted to show you how Ein L'davar Sof plays out. Let's take a look at Ein L'davar Sof, and we're going to see right now the most well-known example of Ein L'davar Sof. We actually touched on this briefly in the first shiur. The Mishnah at the beginning of Psachim, after in the first Mishnah, presenting us with the obligation to do Bedikat Chametz, after you've checked the room, and by the way, this is something that theoretically we could all be concerned with. It's certainly a concern if you have animals or very, very little kids. Once you've checked the room, you don't need to then be worried after you fully check the room and there's no chametz there, or you've gotten the chametz out, that maybe after you left the room, a rat brought more chametz into the room. Or from a spot in the room. Bayit here meaning a room. Makom means like a corner of the room. You know, I cleaned that corner of the room. I don't have to worry that suddenly a rat brought more chametz there. I don't, because otherwise I'm going to end up running in circles. Im kein mi chatzer la chatzer mi ir la ir end of the varsof. Because I could clean out a whole property, or I could clean out a whole city, and then end of the varsof, because I could be concerned that something brought chametz into the city. I'm not going to have that concern. And the Rambam states it quite clearly here in source 7, Ein choshin shema gerach hulda chametz l'makom she'in machisin bo chametz. Now he stipulates, we're not concerned that a rat might have brought chametz into a place where chametz is not normally brought. Remember, the halacha is that bidikat chametz is only an obligation in a place where food is brought. So if you have a home where either there's no kids or everybody abides by the rule that there's no food upstairs, there's no food downstairs, no food in that room, then you don't have to check that room. You don't have to go there. She'im nachush v'bayit l'bayit, nachush me'ir le'ir ve'ein l'davar sof. So the Rambam simply says, restates the Mishnah, that if you're going to be concerned about room to room, you should have to be concerned of everything and ein l'davar sof. I'm going to ask you right now before we go further, is the ein l'davar sof here the same as ours? Meaning, in our case, the challenge to Rabbi Yehuda is, if you're concerned that that the wife might die and you need the understudy wife, then extend that and say you should be concerned that the understudy wife might die, and then just you'll have a huge line of wives waiting, and that's undoable. Maybe that's what he means. And here the same thing, you're going to have to be just forever rechecking the room. Is that the same Ein La Davar Sof? What do you think? Is that the same concern?
Yes.
Okay, go ahead. Explain. What's the
why thing? Are there the same? Just, you can go on forever. In other words, you can just, there's no end to the number of wives. There's no end to the checking on comets.
Right.
There's okay. No, so good. Yeah. So that's okay. Why I say yes.
And as a result of that, I love what you're saying. Okay. In other words, there's no end to it, and therefore what? That's my next question. There's no
end. We have to cut it off at some point. We have to say, okay, we do it once and that's it.
Okay. So now with chametz, that's what you're saying. We check the room once. Once we checked it, we put a check mark on the door, we walk out. And unless we see a rat walking with chametz, we don't check again, right? No. How does that play with the wife? Like,
well, there's no end to it.
No, I know, but there's now, no how does your solution?
Another wife, and even though both of them are very unlikely, it's unlikely that you're going to have a rat come in, you know, the day after with a bagel.
Right.
So both situations are unlikely.
Okay, good. So again, let's play it out. You're let's keep rolling with what you said. That you're saying that if I check this room and I've checked it from corner to corner, there's no chametz there. I put a check mark on the door and I walk out and I don't suddenly start raising, I guess we'd call it OCD concerns. Oh, maybe something happened in the meantime. I have to go back and check it again. How, translate that to the wife.
Yeah.
Translate that thinking, that formulation to the wife.
Okay, so I'm trying to say, let me think of it. You have a backup wife in case the first wife dies. Okay, yeah. You have a wife. The wife dies, unlikely, and then you have a backup. So then you have a multiplication. Let's say the odds of your wife dying before Yom Kippur is going to be 1 in 1,000. So the second one will have the same thing. So that's a 1 in 1,000,000 or 1/10 to 3.
Good. So then based on what you're saying, if you want to parallel, so
then you can,
the problem.
Yeah.
If you're going to parallel it, then just like you check the room once for chametz, you should have one backup wife. Right?
Well, that's, yeah, I guess so. Here,
except that Ein La Davar Sof was used as an argument against any backup wives. That's why I'm asking you. What does Ein La Davar Sof mean? What's the formulation in sort of philosophy of law? What does this mean, Ein La Davar Sof? So I just want to point out that it's not so simple. And now let's move on to some other examples. And let's see if we can come up with either a way of defining what Ein La Davar Sof means, or maybe it means several different things depending on the case. And we'll have to identify that. Okay. So let's, okay, very good. Now, let's go to the next case. The next case, very small piece, but it is a Mishnah in Masachet Parah. It's also discussed in Masachet Avodah Zarah. It's talking about the Parah Duma. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Eina nikechet min ha'ovdei kochavim. You may not buy the Parah Duma from a non-Jew. Okay, and now Amrulo, they said to him, well, fine, but ma'aseu l'kachua mimben ovdei kochavim et saidan. Now, there's several versions of this story in Agadah of a famous pagan by the name of Duma, who, according to one story, he was a tremendous, he was a paragon of honoring his parents. You probably know the story. They came to buy some jewels for him from him for the Choshen, and the lockbox where the jewels were, the key was under his father's head, and his father was sleeping. And he refused to wake his father, even though he stood to make a lot of money. And so that was like the example of kibbutz, the extreme example of kibbutz avim. And therefore, they said the reward was that the next year he had a parah duma born in his flock, and the chachamim came to buy the parah duma from him. And he said to them, I know that you will pay any amount of money in the world. You guys recognize this Agadah from Masachet Kiddushin. I know that you'll pay any amount in the world, but I only want to charge you for the amount of money that I lost on the jewel deal. All right, so very nice story. His name is Duma, and according to that story, he lived in Ashkelon. Here, there's a Duma, which you have to assume is the same guy, but he lives in Sidon, which is not anywhere near Ashkelon. And the story is that they bought the Parah Duma, but the point is they bought Parah Duma from a goy. So that seems to prove that Rabbi Eliezer's position is challenged by case law. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Meshamrin ota shelo lavod ba'kol avudah. So Rabbi Yehuda says, what do we do to make sure, because we have to see, what's the problem with buying it from a non-Jew? So there's two problems. One problem is that the Pasuk says, v'yikhu elacha paraduma, they should buy to you. And the idea is that both the buyer and the seller have to be Jewish, but there's a simple solution to that, which is that the goy can sell it to a civilian Jew, and then the Jew sells it to the mikdash. So that's a simple solution. But there's a second problem, is that maybe before you went to buy it, the non-Jew did some work with the parah duma, which would invalidate it. Whatever it was, whether the work was work or whether the work was bestiality, whatever it might be, that would have invalidated it. All right? And so now, watch how this plays out. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Shamrino ta shelo lavad ba kol avodah. When a parah duma is born, we watch it to make sure that no avodah, no yoke goes on its back, no avodah, nothing goes on its back. Amrulo im kein ein la davar sof. So now, again, it's Rabbi Yehuda who says, this is what we do. And the challenge to, again, Rabbi Yehuda is ein la davar sof. What's the ein la davar sof? Harei bechezkata kshera. Meaning, we have an animal here, it's a few months old, we found out about it, we come, we see it, and the owners say, this is a parah, you know, we see it's a parah duma, we check it out, whatever color we hold aduma is, sadigon brown, people red, and we're able to buy it, and we say it's a chazaka, unless we know differently that it was worked, we assume that it was not worked. Unless we know differently that something inappropriate happened to it, which would invalidate it, we don't think that that's the case. But Rabbi Yehuda said, we have to guard it basically from the moment it's born. Now, what does Ein Ladav Arsof here mean? I mean, we could have guards there, and the minute that a cow goes into, starts giving birth, we could dispatch a guard. And, you know, if the owner says, I think that this may be a parah duma for whatever reasons, and we have a guard, and the minute it's parah duma, we just have to have guards standing there, just like we do with chametz. And we guard it.
You need a guard for every cow, always, basically.
Well, we don't have to. In other words, we don't have to make sure that every cow could be the mother of a parah duma. We could just say that you are raising a particular breed of cows, and you think there might be a parah duma there based on the coloration of earlier cows. We're willing to dispatch a shomer to be there at the moment of birth. And from that moment, the minute it's a parah duma, we'll have a shomer there that'll watch it the whole time. So what's Ein Ladav Arsof? What's the challenge of Ein Ladav Arsof? Here. So the Chasdei David, David Pardo, who wrote a comprehensive commentary on the Tosefta. This Tosefta does not appear in Shas in its form. And so the Chasdei David here says the concern is that that if there was certain work done to the mother, it would invalidate the baby.
Mm-hmm.
Which means now, what's the problem? Where's the end of our sof?
Yeah, no. You'd have to check every animal that's pregnant.
Okay, and watch this. There are certain.
And you have no idea.
Say it again.
You have no idea what kind of child.
And it's going to be worse. There's certain things that if they happen to the mother before she became pregnant, it would still invalidate it. Which means basically what situation are we in? We're in an impossible situation. We could never have a proper parah duma, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, is this one more like the chametz or more like the wife? our Mishnah of the substitute wife or the room, checking the room for chametz? What do you think? Or are they all the same thing?
This is
Bill, you understand why I challenged your equation of the room to the wife? Because in the case of the wife, they're challenging having any extra wife. In the case of the room, we all agree you have to check it once, but not again. Now, what do you do here? What's this like?
This seems totally different.
It's a totally different case. We got three different cases operating on three different wavelengths. And end of our sof is just conveniently a phrase which works in all three cases, but doesn't mean the same thing each time. I'm not saying you're wrong.
No, I'm not sure I understand the last case.
But here you can't verify. You can't verify. Even if you tried, you wouldn't be able to verify.
Oh, good, good. Okay, so listen to what Alan's saying. In the case of the Paraduma, we want to make sure that its mother never had anything happen to it that would invalidate the baby.
But that's not the, is that the halacha that the mother can't have worked or
certain
what
kind
does
of
the mother have to do with
kind
anything?
Of things, certain kind of things that happened to the mother before she got pregnant would invalidate the baby as being a paraduma, right? So if that's the case, what?
But then you're going to go back to the grandmother and the-
Worse, you can't go back, because what would you need?
You need to have a shomer on each one of those.
Which is?
Impossible.
Not only impossible, but it's not just impossible because it's impractical. It's also impossible because you have to do everything retroactively, which you can't do. So the question is, what are we dealing with here? Are we dealing with a third category of Ein L'Davar Sof? Are we dealing with something that's more like chametz, where we say, okay, because look at the language. What's the status? You see a paraduma, it's a newborn. We assume that in the last month since it was born, nothing happened, and nothing happened to its mother because we don't know anything happened to its mother. And we apply a chazakah, a presumption of status that it is okay unless we know differently.
Like a chametz.
It sounds like
chametz.
No, it's like chametz, exactly. The chazak of this room is checked. Right. And maybe the wife is a different story. Okay, good. So now I want to take you, these are all kind of the small pieces. I want to take you into one of the two larger sugyot we're going to see. And that is a sugya at the beginning of Masechet Sotah. Now, just a quick intro, the way that Sotah works, the Sotah system works, is a man thinks that his wife is, or man's nuts, but he claims that his wife is committing infidelity, all right? What has to happen for the Sotah process to get started? Meaning for him to actually come to the Beit Din and make the accusation, and then that starts going to Rishalayim, making her take the oath, the whole thing. What has to happen first? That's all we're concerned with here is the prerequisite.
Doesn't he need witnesses?
Yeah, and witnesses to what? Excellent, Marcia. Witnesses to what?
Yichud.
Okay, that's second. But before witnesses to Yichud, and this is critical, what has to happen first? So the
hurrah, warning.
A kind of warning, we call it kinui. Kinui literally means stating jealousy, right? The kinati shto. Now, the kinui happens when the fellow says in front of X, I'm not going to say who X is, says, I think that you are having an affair with this guy, and you have to name the guy. I don't want you to be talking to this guy or having to do with this guy. And subsequently, we have witnesses who see her in seclusion with that guy. All right? That's the premise. Now, the first Mishnah in Masechet Sotah, right here, source 9, HaMekaneh LeIshto. So if somebody wants to issue the warning, Rabbi Eliezer Omer Mekaneh Al Pishnayim. He has to have two witnesses to the warning. But then watch this. He can make her drink, which means the second step can happen, even if he has only one witness that she was in seclusion, or he makes the claim, meaning he saw she was in seclusion. So he says to her in front of witnesses, you're having an affair with George. I don't want you being in George. And two witnesses hear it. And then he comes to the Beit Din and says, I have these two witnesses that I issued the warning, and I saw her go into a room with George. She was there for half an hour. he can start the process. Rabbi Yeshua Omer Mekanel Pishnayim Machshikal Pishnayim. No, you need two witnesses for both steps. Now you understand the protection involved, because look how the system could be manipulated very badly in Rabbi Eliezer's position. The husband could decide, or it could be nuts, or he could decide he wants to really hurt his wife. So he could say, I'm issuing a warning that and make up a name. Doesn't matter. I mean, make up, not a name, make up something where the guy, she's never had anything to do with. And he says, I think you're having an affair. She says, you're nuts. I said, I don't care. I think you're having an affair with this guy. And she says his name and identifies him in front of two witnesses. Fine. Then he comes to the court a week later and says, I saw her go into a room with that guy. Never happened, but he makes it up. So you understand that this is a recipe for disaster. But Yeshua says, no, you need two witnesses to each step. Okay, good. Now, look at the
Tosefta. He can't be a witness, right?
What? Say again?
He can't be a witness. The husband,
right, right. The husband, so according to Rabbi Eliezer, if he himself sees, or at least he claims, he saw her go into a room with George, that's enough. Remember, we don't, important note, we do not have witnesses to infragment delicto. It's not, we don't have witnesses to actually it, relations. We have witnesses to seclusion with the background of a warning. So according to Rabbi Eliezer, as long as the warning was issued in front of witnesses, if he comes on his own and says, or he brings one witness, or he himself says, I saw her go in the room with that guy, sota starts, which means the whole thing could have been made up. Rabbi Yeshua says, no, you need two witnesses for both steps. Now, the reason I bring that to you is the Tosefta. Look at Tosefta, source 11. Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda, Amar Mishum, Rabbi Elazar, Mekanei al pi eid echad o al pi atzmo. So now we have a flip. He says that you could do the kinui with one witness or alone. Umashkal pishnayim. But the second stage needs witnesses. Now, Heshivu al divrei Rabbi Yosef Yehuda, ein la davar sof. And the response, the rejection of this was, ein la davar sof. What does that mean, ein la davar sof? So here we have the Gemara explicates it and plays with it. Here we go. The Gemara on this first Mishnah here says, Matnitin delo kiaitana. The Tana Rabbi Yosef Yehuda Omer Mishum Rabbi Eliezer. In the Bavli, it reads it as he's quoting Rabbi Eliezer, which means we have two versions of Rabbi Eliezer. Now, just to clarify, in our Mishnah, Rabbi Eliezer said that the first stage needs two, but the second stage needs none. And Rabbi Yosef Yehuda reports in Rabbi Eliezer's name the opposite, which means what we do know is, according to this, Rabbi Eliezer said one stage can be done without two witnesses. And we have machlok at which stage. All right? Now, Rabbi Yosef Yehuda Omer Mishum Rabbi Eliezer. That's why the Gemara says our Mishnah does not follow this Tana, because our Mishnah claims that Rabbi Eliezer's position was that you don't need two witnesses for the second stage. And in this version, you don't need two witnesses for the first stage. That's the Tosefta. Now, let's see what does that mean. Now watch how they're going to lay out for us what Ein L'Davar Sof actually means in this case. Remember, in this version, Rabbi Yosef Yehuda is saying, you do not need witnesses to the warning, but you do need witnesses to the seclusion. So now we have a very obvious problem, which is a guy is crazy and he's filled with jealousy. He sees that his wife is alone in a room with a guy for 20 minutes. A guy, there's been no relationship between them before, the business, whatever it is. And so he comes to the Beit Din and he says, by the way, a month ago, I warned her about that guy alone. And now I have witnesses that she was in that room with him. Sota will start. And the claim is that Ein L'Davar Sof. Why does that mean? Why is that? Because a woman could never live. Because any time that she's alone with a man for a few minutes in a totally permissible environment, Bala Bayir, all the husband has to do is bring some witnesses, or there happen to be witnesses who see her, and then the husband can retroactively say, I warned her about that guy. It never happened. I warned her about that guy, and suddenly Sota will start. Right? Now, Halu Mishnatenu Yesh L'Davar Sof? So you're telling me that in our Mishnah, now this is the one place that this phrase shows up, Yesh L'Davar Sof, as the opposite. You're saying that in our Mishnah, yesh lo davar sof, and yesh lo davar sof is the desired result. Yesh lo davar sof means there's a cap to it. It can't get out of hand. But is that true in our Mishnah that yesh lo davar sof? Zimnin delo istatar v'amar istatar. In our Mishnah, we have the opposite problem, which is the husband issues the warning in front of two people. He makes it up. And then he on his own comes and says, she was alone with the guy. Which means the minute the husband issues a warning about some guy, she now has to always be worried. She's already on the hot seat. Because he could turn around the next day and say she went into seclusion when it never happened. She doesn't even know who this guy is. He comes and says, I think you're having an affair with George. She doesn't know George, she never heard of George. And the next day he comes to Beit Din and says she was alone with George. She was never alone with George. And the only thing that we have witnesses to is his warning. So yeah, and the rest of our Mishnah also. So here's the problem. The Gemara is challenging the claim of Ein Lo Davar Sof on Rabbi Yosef Yehuda's opinion. Why aren't they challenging that in the Mishnah? The Mishnah also Ein Lo Davar Sof. So you understand the phrasing of the Gemara. Heshivu chachamim ledivrei Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda Ein Lo Davar Sof. In other words, Rabbi Eliezer said something and he's gone. And now we have two late Tanaim disagreeing about what he said. They agree that he said only one stage needs witnesses. And they disagree which stage. In our Mishnah, the warning needs witnesses, but not the seclusion. Rabbi Yosef Yehuda says, no, he said the opposite. The warning doesn't need witnesses, but the seclusion does. And they said, oh, according to you, Ein Lo Davar Sof. What do you mean according to him? According to them also, Ein Lo Davar Sof. Because Ein Lo Davar Sof is when either one of the stages doesn't need witnesses. Right? Zimnin delo istatar v'mai istatar. In our Mishnah, Rabbi Lezer said, you don't need witnesses to seclusion. So he could make that up. So Rabbi Yitzchak bar Yosef and Rabbi Yochanan. Watch this. After the Divrei Rabbi Yosef Yehuda, Ein Lo Davar Sof. Now watch this. We're adding in one word into the Tosefta. And I'll take you back to the Tosefta here. That we're adding in af here, right? Where my right there, al af. What does af mean? Af means even. Even. Meaning, even Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda has an Ein Lo Davar Sof. And certainly the original Rabbi Eliezer Ein Lo Davar Sof. Rabbi Eliezer's position is untenable either way. Whether the way in the Mishnah or the way in the Tosefta, either version of him is Ein Lo Davar Sof, because the minute that either stage can happen without proper witnesses, then this marriage is impossible. She can't be maintained. She can't maintain herself. So after Rabbi Yehuda v'lo mibayil mishnatein, what do you mean? Our Mishnah is worse, meaning after the, and we're very, very careful with the language. After the Rabbi Yosef Yehuda means even Rabbi Yosef Yehuda is a problem. What, in our Mishnah is more of a problem? Adirabba, l'mishnatenu ikar ikar, hatam leka ikar. It's not the same, because in our Mishnah, at least there's some sort of an ikar, because the guy issued a warning in front of witnesses. The process started properly. But in the Rabbi Yosef Yehuda, there was no start to the process. So Ella idmar achidmar. Here's how we want to fix the Tosefta. I mean, it's like Rabbi Yosef and Yochanan. Meaning, Rabbi Yosef Yehuda and even our Mishnah, Ein Lo Davar Sof, which means we're basically rejecting Rabbi Eliezer in either version. Because either version of Rabbi Eliezer is untenable. But now let's talk about what Ein Lo Davar Sof means. What does it mean here? What's Ein Lo Davar Sof here? And I'll reiterate to put it put it out there for us. According to Rabbi Yoshua, which is the halacha, the sota process can only happen when there are two stages, both of which have two proper, impartial, external witnesses. The warning with the named paramour and testimony that she and that paramour subsequently were in seclusion. Rabbi Eliezer, in the version of the Mishnah, says that the testimony of the seclusion doesn't need witnesses. The husband can make the claim. In Rabbi Yosef Yehuda's version of Rabbi Eliezer, it's the opposite. He says the warning doesn't need witnesses, but the seclusion does. And we're saying that in either case, Ein Lo Davar Sof. What does Ein Lo Davar Sof here mean? Is it like chametz? Is it like the Para Aduma? Is it like the dead wife on Yom Kippur? What do you think? Or is it something else?
Seems like it's something else.
Okay, go ahead. What is it?
Because it seems like the husband can make up anything at any time.
Right, good. And where's the angle of ourself? I'm with you.
It's not really about things that could conditionally happen outside of his control, but rather it's something that he could instigate at any time for any reason.
Okay, good. So that means that angle of ourself here means that that if you set this up, there is no way to protect against a crazy husband. Crazy, angry, whatever you want to call it, right? But spiteful, right? She has no protection. Are we all agreed that that's what Ein Lo Davar Sof here means in one form or another? Okay, good. So now let's go to the next. Well, yeah.
No.
You agree, Bill?
Yes.
Okay, good. So we're all on that page. Now let's go to the next case. The next case, which is really the last case of Ein Lo Davar Sof here, with one kind of interesting exception, which we'll do before the end, is about Dam Nida. And you're going to find interesting change here in the language. The Mishnah towards the end in the eighth parak of Nida says if a woman, now this is, we're talking about a ketem here. A ketem is a stain where the woman did not feel anything come out of her body, but she finds a stain. She can attribute it to anything. She can attribute it to anything, right? I had my baby in bed and my baby cut his finger, and that's from blood from there, if it really happened, right? Let's say that she herself was shechting animals, or she was herself dealing with tamin, with blood stains of other, right? Or she sat next to people who were involved with tamin. Or hargama acholit, if she herself killed a louse, harezu tolaba, she could say that blood is from there. Meaning, she's not making a claim to us. She herself can say, that's that. Remember, tamim are all derabanan, she did not feel anything come out of her body. And therefore she could say, oh, okay, that's from the other thing. And therefore I'm not tmea. Okay, good. Now, the Tosefta tells us the following. It expands on that idea. And Rav Shimon Gamliel says, "Im hargam ma'acholet tolav im lav ena tolav." Only if she actually killed a louse, a little bug, she can do it. If not, not. And now watch what Rav Shimon Gamliel says. Shimon Gamliel, "Ani omer davar echad, behem amru davar echad." I and the rabbis each had a position, which are opposite position. Right? They were very lenient. Any kind of connection with blood, she could be tolav, she's not tamei. Lidvarai ein sof uladivrehem ein sof. Look at that. My position is going to lead to Ein Sof, and their position is going to lead to Ein Sof. And now he explains. The Dvarai Ein Sof, why? Ela Isha Torah in Lachamita, Shin Alam Acholet. You're never going to have a woman who's Torah because there's always blood here and there. And if she herself did, wasn't dealing with it, there's always things, bugs. I mean, they lived in a different world. There's always bugs, there's always blood. And if every time there's blood, you say, oh, it must be from her, because unless she herself was killing a louse, it's not, you can't attribute it. She's always going to be tmeya. Always going to be tmeya. This is the Ein Sof. L'divreyam Ein Sof, Ein L'cha Isha Shi Tmeya. According to Chachamim, there's never a woman who's tamei. Why? Ein L'cha Sadin Shein Alati Pederim, because there's always blood here and there. There's always something causing blood. And therefore, she always has a good reason. She's not being dishonest. Halachically, she's saying, there's blood, and there was blood in the room, so that blood's from that, not from me. Right? And then he ends up saying, Roani Tiver Rochan Gamliel, who put a shear. If the blood's this big, then you can attribute something else. If it's bigger, then it's hers. Okay. Notice how the Gemara quotes this and does something interesting. The Gemara in Nida quotes this and then says, L'dvarai in Kates, L'divrei Chavirai in Sof. Look what the Gemara did to the Tosefta. In the Tosefta, you had this very neat, L'dvarai in Sof, the Divrei Amin Sof, which if you think about it, shows you that neither one of our positions, you're going to be all saying, neither one of our positions is tenable. Because according to me, every woman is always going to be Tmeyah. And according to them, any, no woman is ever going to be Tmeyah. And the reality is that sometimes you are, sometimes you're not. But notice that the Gemara changed it and changed his wording to Dvarai in Kates. What's a Kates? Kates is a soul. So it could be here, and this is what the part, what Pardo suggests, is that the Gemara simply didn't want to use the same word for both of them because one is Tameh, one is Tahor. But I think there's something else going on. What is he saying? With Dvarai in Kates means that no woman will ever be Tahor. She'll always be Tameh. There's always blood around. There's always blood here and there, animals, babies, whatever it is. I mean, they obviously, again, they lived in a very different environment. And so therefore, anytime there's blood anywhere in your body, it goes, ooh, that was for me, I'm Tmeah. What does that mean in Kates then? Kates does mean end, but the Gemara is shifting it away from the Ein Sof. He says, the Divrei Chavirai Ein Sof. My colleagues, they'll be Ein Sof. Why? And then they quote the rest, which is, the Divrei Chavirai Ein Sof, because no woman will ever be Tameh, because there's always blood on the sheet from something. It could be from her, but she'll, it was from something else, and she'll always be Tahor. So Ein Sof, where's, what's the Ein Sof here? All right, so we've seen five cases. The dead wife, the chametz in the room, the paraduma, the warning of the sota, and this. We range all over the place. What do all five have in common? Let's start with that, because these are the five cases in Shas of in the Dvar Sof. What do all five cases have in common?
It's an underlying.
What?
There's an underlying actor here that which we never talked. There's an underlying actor here which we never talked about.
Go ahead.
And that's the issue of Safik.
Okay, good. Talk to me. Good.
In many of these cases, there's enough safek that you say that you can make up anything. So okay, I think that's good. An underlying action.
Excellent. So let's pick up what Sherman said and roll with it. Safek, a doubt. What's the nature of, let's go backwards. What's the nature of safek in the case of the blood?
It could have come from her or it could not have come from her.
Okay, so we're looking safek. At a physical reality and we don't know to what to attribute it, right? Okay, good. Roll backwards. What's the case with Sota? And where's your Safek there?
Is she?
Husband can claim anything.
Is that credibility of the accuser.
Was she unfaithful or was she not unfaithful? Safek.
Is that the Safek or is the Safek something a little more nuanced here? Is the safek, was she faithful?
If the safek, if the husband is creating a situation which didn't exist.
Right. So in other words, it's because remember the safek about whether she was faithful or not, that the water is going to prove. That the trial is going to, the ordeal is going to prove. But the question is whether or not the process should start is based on a question, did the husband really issue the warning or is making it up? Right? Or was she really in seclusion or is making it up? Is that the same safek as the blood?
No, because one's a natural act and one isn't.
No, it's one, we have blood in front of us, we don't know what to attribute it to. Here, we have a claim, we don't know whether accepted as true. It's very different, right? Let's roll backwards. What about the case of the paraduma? Why is it Ein L'Dvar Sof? And you're right, it's safek. What's the safek?
Whether something happened to the mother.
Exactly. Did something happen to this cow or to its mother that would have invalidated it that we have no idea about? Do you see how that's kind of like the Sota case?
You can never prove it. You don't know where it's, you can never get You're, there.
Right. In other words, the minute you claim that without any proper testimony, we're going to raise something as a possibility that might have happened, then there's no, the floodgates are open. There's no way to control it. All right, good. Roll it back to chametz. What's the deal with chametz? I like to contend that the chametz is like the blood. Because what's the state, the thing with the blood? You see blood, and you don't know what to attribute it to.
Right.
Right. Here, you have a room, you checked it, and now you're going to raise a safek. Has something new happened in reality that I wasn't aware of? It's not like the Sota case. It's not like the Paraduma case, right? Seemingly. Maybe it's even not like the Blood case, but it's certainly not like those. All right, let's go now. Let's go back.
Blood case, you have a blood case. You have a physical characteristic that you're
exactly
you're exactly.
Dubious about. With chametz, you're right. With chametz, it's actually not alike because in the case of chametz, there's nothing there. You're now raising the possibility something might have happened. You act, the chametz case may even be like the paraduma. Maybe something happened that I don't know about, and that's why we use the term chazakah in both cases. Okay, so I'm going to buy that, Sherwin. The paraduma and the chametz are alike. All right, what about the dead wife? Bring it back to the dead wife. What's the dead wife like?
We don't know what's going to happen in the future.
Yeah, so what's that like in these cases? You're right, it's like none of these cases. The dead wife doesn't fit the model here, does it? Because what's the concern of Ein L'Davar Sof in all of these cases? If I have to suddenly look at a physical characteristic like the blood and raise all sorts of possibilities that it might have been from this, that, and the other, I'm never going to establish that it's her blood, she'll never be tameh. That's the claim, right? If I take a look at this room and I say, chametz might have come in, it might have come, I don't know, this para, something might have happened to it. I can never actually have a para duma. I can never have actually have a clean house for chametz. I can never have a woman who's tamei. In other words, and I'm going to bring it back to our case. In other words, the Torah speaks about a reality that I can never achieve. I can never have a para duma because I can never assure that nothing happened. I can never have a woman who's tameah because, that's the claim in the Tosefta, because I will always claim that the blood is from something else. Now, it's a little difficult because it's only tamim, but gosh, it's different. And I can never have a chametz-free room because I always have to be concerned there's more chametz in it. Now, there's an important difference here. Is chametz and tamim are both derabanan. What do I mean by that is, tamim or derabanan, if a woman actually feels blood coming out, she's tmeya doraita, there's no tola. And chametz, remember, mi doraita, all you have to do is say, I don't own it. Nikat chametz is derabanan. The Gemara says it explicitly. All right. But the Torah does tell us that we need a paraduma. And the paraduma has to be asher in bamum, asher lo ala aleha ol. And can we guarantee that 100%? The claim is we can't, because ain't love of ourselves. There's no way we can guarantee every moment in the past history of the family. Therefore, what is our supposition? That the Torah doesn't require that. Because if the Torah says have a paraduma, and it's impossible to have a paraduma that fits the parameters, that means that your standards for the parameters are not what the Torah is asking for. Okay? Now let's roll back to the dead wife, and I'll show you what I want to go back to the Sifra. We have always understood, and
it's,
I think,
too bad they didn't have a Tanai about the dead wife.
Say it again. Say it again, Charles.
I'm saying that it's too bad that it was. I'm saying there should have been a Tanai that the dead wife, which if she's healthy, that's one halacha. If she's at all ill, then the safek enters. Then you need to have the second wife available.
Right.
But then there's no Tanai. So,
and interestingly, the sugya didn't go that, except it went that in one place. If you recall from last week, we said that when the Kohen Gadol gives the Kiddushin and marries the other girl and gives her a get al tanai, so that one way or the other, there'll be no moment of the Avodah where he has either zero or two wives. Said if he sees that his wife is dying, he quickly goes and fulfills the tanai. Remember that? So that the get becomes canceled, right? So you're right. So that we do a little bit take into account the very sick wife. But typically, that's not what we're looking at. So I'm going to suggest what I think is maybe a little bit of a revolutionary interpretation of the Sifra, but I think it may be accurate. The Sifra says something that always bothered me, the language of the Sifra. It says, Minayin, kashem shematkinin lo kohen acher tachtav, shemir abo psul, kach mikachim lo isha acheret, al tanai. Now, the word minayin is the problem, because the word minayin means, what's my source, which means I'm claiming this is d'oraita, right? As opposed to saying, we're putting in a rabbinic injunction to make protect against something. Sounds like it's d'oraita. And what's his claim? V'chiper bado v'ad beito, which means since the Torah says that the Kohen Gadol has to have a household, beito zu ishto, and therefore, by definition, we have to have a standing wife ready to come in. What did they answer? In kein ein lo davar sof. What does that mean, ein lo davar sof? So I think what it means is that if you're going to claim that the Torah mandates that we have to have an understudy wife because the Torah mandates that the Kohen Gadol is not able to do the kapara without being married, he said, then you end up with an untenable situation. Because now what you're going to say is, the Torah has set me up for having to cover all these bases. I have to cover extra bases. What if both wives die, et cetera, et cetera. What are they challenging? They're not challenging the gzerah. They're challenging the drasha. And I think maybe they're saying, chiper bado va'ad beito may not mean that. It may not mean that he has to have a wife. Or shall we say, it may not mean that having a wife is indispensable. Because look at the language of the Sifra. I know it's not the standard way of reading it, but look at the language of the Sifra. The language of the Sifra is not, we're not concerned she's going to die. It's, that's not what v'chiper bado v'ad beito means. It means that he should be married, and should have kids, he should be a happy guy, he should have a great life, but if he doesn't, he can still do kapara. And what's beito? Beito is his household, whatever his household is. In other words, maybe they're challenging beito hi ishto, that interpretation that beito hi ishto. And that changes everything here. Because the minute that ein lo davar sof now doesn't become, you can't raise that problem like you did with chametz, because then there's just, you know, no end, you're going to keep checking the room back all the time, and here you have to supply more wives. Here they're claiming the Torah could not have mandated a thing which is uncontrollable. And therefore, the Torah didn't mandate it. You can't guarantee the wife's going to be alive. Therefore, the Torah didn't mandate having a wife, Yom Kippur. Just like you cannot set up a sota system, which is untenable, because the husband can make stuff up. And just like you can't have dam work that way when, as a result, she's going to not be tameh. Or shall we say better, you can't set up a paraduma that has to have been watched for two generations. The Torah couldn't have mandated it. So the Torah, therefore, that's not a requirement. And therefore, we operate with a chazakah. Now we operate the chazakah that this paradigma was never used. We assume it. We assume the mother was not the victim of bestiality, and therefore it's okay. And therefore, what do we do here? The wife is alive. That's fine. If something lo aleinu happens, it happens. The Kohen Gadol can continue because the Torah would not have mandated something that would have led to ein lo davar sof. I want to end because I have exactly 2 minutes with one other place where ein lo davar sof is used in Divrei Chachamim, and it's an unusual place. It's a Sifri in Dvarim. And it's a famous discussion that shows up also in the Bavli in Brachot. The Torah says, V'yasafta deganecha, right? The Torah says that I will bless you and I'll give you lots of rain and you will collect your grain. Lama ne'amar. So why does the Torah say, V'yasafta deganecha? I mean, it's a no-brainer. If you have grain, you have grain. You're going to collect it. What are you going to do? Because the Torah says, if Yeshua says you should always be studying Torah. All right, and this is also a little bit in honor of Lag Bomer. I might think that therefore I should never stop learning Torah and not do anything else. This is not a political statement. Talmud Lomar v'yasafta. You have to collect grain. Derech Eretz Dibra Torah. Meaning you have to live like a normal person. You have to have a job. You have to do work in the field. You have to collect stuff. And you learn Torah during your free moment. That's Rabbi Ishmael. Shimon Yochai Omer Ein LaDavar Sof. Now, watch what he says about this. If you're going to harvest at the harvest time, Choresh Bishat Charish and plow when it's time to plow. Dash Bishat Sharav Zoreh Bishat Aruach. You do all the processes one at a time. Torah. When are you ever going to learn? In other words, if you do all of the things you have to do as a farmer, there's no time to learn. Ella and the Torah and so Ella Israel when Am Israel does God's will, then their work is done by others. In other words, they get to sit and learn, and other people do their work for them. And he quotes a pasuk in Yeshayahu, "Yamdu zarim v'ra'utzonchem." But when they're not doing God's will, then they actually have to work. So this is Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai's take. And his take is that having to actually behave, and Rabbi Naftali, you won't mind my co-opting the phrase, but im derech eretz, to behave here in a normal fashion of working, is a sign of divine disfavor. Because if God was happy with us, then we wouldn't have to work and other people would do our work for us and we could sit and study the whole time. Right? Not only that, but we have to work for other people. He quotes the pasuk. Now, important to note, the Gemara in Brachot quotes this passage, the in the sixth parak, and Abaye says, "Harbe asuk Rabbi Yishmael ve'al tabi adam." Many people followed the direction of Rabbi Yishmael, which is you do regular work and you study during your free time, but you got to work like a regular person, and it worked for them. A lot of people tried Rav Shimon Bar Yochai's approach. It didn't work. So just a comment about Ein Ladav Arsof. But finally, after three shiurim, Yesh Ladav Arsof, we completed this passage. And next week, we're going to start on a new sugya on Masachet Yoma, likely with the sugya of Zman Kriyat Shema, which, believe it or not, shows up in something we're going to get to in about a week, around that Flamed Gimel. And so we'll make that probably a two-parter, and it's going to take us back to Brachot a little bit, and then we'll go from there. Okay.